November 16th, year 2001. We're in East Lansing, Michigan. I'm Jeff Charnley, interviewing Jack Thompson for the MSU Oral History Project for the Sesquicentennial, the institution to be commemorated in the year 2005. Mr. Thompson's given name is Walter John Thompson. As you can see, Mr. Thompson, we've got a tape recorder here for this oral history. Do you give us permission to tape this interview?
Correct.
Okay. I'd like to start with just some general questions about your personal background, your educational background. Where were you born and raised, and where did you go to school prior to college?
I was born in Lansing, Michigan, lived there until I was about seven, lived a year in Williamston, about 3 years in south of Mason, moved to Trowbridge, which is now part of East Lansing, and then in 1948 moved Bogue Street in East Lansing. I've lived various places in East Lansing since. Mm-hmm. Went to grade schools in Lansing, Williamston, south of Mason, went to Champion School, which was also known as Harrison Road School, which is on the corner, was on the corner of Harrison and Mount Hope, a one-room school. Went, and then we had the through that went through the sixth grade. For the junior and high and high school, we could go to either Okemos or to East Lansing. East Lansing was closer, but Okemos had a school bus that stopped right at the school, so most of us went to Okemos. So I went there through the seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth grade. Then when I was going into the 11th grade, this Champion School District became part of the East Lansing School District, so I had to go to East Lansing for the 11th and 12th grade. Mm-hmm. Graduated from East Lansing.
Mm-hmm. What did your parents do?
My father was basically a farmer for many years. He was a milkman before I was born. He had various jobs. He did construction work, and then the reason we moved to Trowbridge was because there was a farm there, and he, a woman owned, and he was, the, you know, did the farm. It was a market garden, and where we lived in what was the old Trowbridge Hotel. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere along there, during the winters, he worked as a janitor for Michigan State University at Mason Abbott. And then when Quonset Village opened right after the war, 1945, he went there as supervisor for Quonset Village. And then my mother was a school teacher for many years, but that was before I was born. Then after she started raising a family, she wasn't working. Then she worked for the English department at Michigan State University in what was the old woodworking building, which was about where the administration building is now.
I see.
And then after that, she worked at Hunt's Food Shop, which was in downtown East Lansing. And then when Snyder Phillips Hall was opened at Michigan State University, she worked there in the food service, and for the, you know, until she wasn't working anymore.
Mm-hmm. What obviously that was in the later years of the Depression.
The later years of Depression.
When you were growing up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was. Right. I was born kind of at the beginning of the Depression and went through the Depression and World War II. So. Mm-hmm. Those various things that my parents did were during the Depression years and the World War II years and after.
Mm-hmm. Where was the Quonset Village located?
Quonset Village was at the corner of, it was the old ROTC drill field where they put it, and Breslin Center is there now.
Mm-hmm. So your father's work initially was part-time, and then it developed into full-time?
Right. At the foot of the university. It was full-time during the winter, so
okay.
It wasn't part-time.
Okay.
During the school year. Mm-hmm. And I can give you some story on that.
Of course.
Okay.
Sure.
Because he was a night man.
Mm-hmm.
what he did was clean the offices and the public areas at night when nobody was around. And on weekends sometimes, Friday or Saturday night, I used to go over there, you know, and kind of help him. That was very, very interesting to me too.
Mm-hmm.
It was at that time Mason Abbott. Mason was housing girls.
Mm-hmm.
Abbott was Army people here for education. The Army or various military units used the university during World War II for training.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you started at what age?
I started working. I mean, full time. Mm-hmm. I mean, meaning real working.
Well, even down as part time.
Okay, so. I was probably 14 years old.
14. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe 13. Let's say 13. Because mm-hmm. when I was 14, during the summer, I went over to Mason Abbott to see if I get a job for the summer, and said I was too young, so I,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I was familiar with Mason Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
After graduation, from high school?
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you end up working for Michigan State?
I started at Michigan State when I was, the next year, when I was 15, and my father was over working Consett's, and so I got a summer job there as a janitor. And then the next year, and then so in 1948, when Snyder Phillips was built, I got a job there in the food service,
mm-hmm.
and I worked weekends and after school in the food service there, and I learned at night, my job was mainly to take the food out to the serving line.
Mm-hmm.
It was called a trucker, a little cart, and you push the food out. And,
mm-hmm.
But on weekends, you know, I did whatever. And one of the things I used to do is work in the kitchen quite a bit. And so one of the cooks there named Niall Dewey kind of took me under his wing and taught me to be a cook.
Mm-hmm. Were you interested in that?
Yes, I was. Very interested in being a cook. I mm-hmm. enjoyed that. And so when I graduated from high school, I just continued full time as a cook.
Okay. So your training as a cook was on the job?
Most cooks at Michigan State University are trained on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them come in, you know, that's cooked somewhere else, but they've cooked somewhere else, they had trained on the job, so there's really no difference in it.
Did he pass on any words of wisdom about institutional cooking to you that you remember? What were some of those things?
I really didn't know. No, there would be no answer to that.
Oh, okay.
Institutional or quantity cooking is different than shorter cooking or restaurant cooking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're cooking one thing in a big batch of it instead mm-hmm. of little bits of lots of things. So,
mm-hmm.
One of the main things I learned in cooking was cleanliness. The cook's very concerned about cleanliness, mm-hmm. about, you know, not doing something that's going to make somebody sick, you know.
Mm-hmm. So food safety as well as food preparation.
Food safety, yeah. Very. Mm-hmm. This was emphasized very early.
Mm-hmm. So this was in the years after the war.
Right.
How would you describe the campus at that time? The mood on the campus? Let's talk about right after the war.
Right after the war, the students that were coming in on the GI Bill, they were older than students would be later the students before the war, you know, I didn't really know much about it. For one, I wasn't that involved, and I wasn't that old. But they were very, very, students then were very concerned about getting an education. They were older, they'd been, you know, they'd saved the world. You know, for one thing, they weren't about to let anybody tell them, you know, what some silly thing to do, like wearing a freshman beanie, you know, that was gone. you know, a lot of them had families too. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted to get their education and, you know, get out and raise their families and get a job. So there wasn't much fooling around.
Mm-hmm. In the early 1950s, maybe right when you started,
mm-hmm.
Did you see any difference after that initial push of the veterans, World War II veterans, was gone?
There was a little difference, but the people, they were the same generation, which is a word I don't like to use, mm-hmm. but there's, you know, they talk about different generations. Generation really to me should mean, you know, my generation was my siblings, which were two of them were fought in World War II. My older sister worked in a defense plant, while I was my younger brother and I were kind of on the cusp of that generation. So we had some of the same values, but we didn't have the same experiences. You know, the difference of it being a kid during the war and being, you know, somebody out there fighting the war.
Mm-hmm.
But we had the same values. So so this was still, I think, we get into the 50s, it was the early 50s, there's still, people were concerned about getting an education. There wasn't, you know, wasn't much, as I said, fooling around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still some, but not much.
Mm-hmm. How did your job change over time in the course of let's say the 50s to the 60s?
Okay, well, my first job after I graduated high school as a cook, I went back to Quonset Village. It was still there. It was temporary housing with Quonset huts, and then a big Quonset hut where cafeteria was. But they were in the process of building more dormitories. Snyder Phillips, three women's dorms, and then Shaw Hall was coming along. So so my job at Quonset Village, it was kind of leftover equipment from Army stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like an Army cooking. But then this beautiful new Shaw Hall was you know, just grand building, was just being built. And so then when Quonset closed, I went over to Shaw Hall as a cook. You know, that was a new equipment and a new building. It was just beautiful.
Night and day?
Night and day difference, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, they're renovating Shaw right now.
Yes, sir, yeah.
At what point did you begin to take some courses at the university?
This was 1952, mm-hmm. And it was, they just started night school. Night classes, it was mostly, you know, just to take a class, and that's the reason I went there, was just to learn something.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't thinking about getting a degree or anything, and it was they had a course called Lit and Fine Arts, which was you could take in place of humanities.
Mm-hmm.
It was in basic college. You had to take so many credits in basic college,
mm-hmm.
To get your degree, and I had an interest in music. And so Lit and Fine Arts was, there was three terms. When the university was in the term system, then three terms, mm-hmm. instead of the two semesters it is now. The three terms of Lit and Fine Arts was music, literature, and art. So I really just took it just to learn something more about music. And so I took a night course in the music part of Litton Fine Arts. And I enjoyed that so much. Next time I took the second term of Litton Fine Arts art, when I had an interest in art anyway. Mm-hmm. And then I took the third one in literature. Then after that, I just kept on going. But instead of taking night courses, I would take 8 o'clocks. So I took probably more 8 o'clocks than anybody in the world. Because I went to work, I was on the afternoon shift at work, so I'd go at 10:30, take an 8 o'clock class, go to work.
Uh-huh, okay. Wait for a long day.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Did university support at that time education for staff or no?
No. That was much later. Uh-huh. In fact, it was after I had graduated before they did that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that benefit came much later.
Much later, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was very cheap.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
cheap.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Were you a musician?
Yes, I played the phonograph and the radio and okay. the tape recorder very well.
Yeah.
I don't read music.
Uh-huh.
My wife is a musician, but I am not. So.
Okay. What in the course of so we're up to the let's say the late 1950s. You're at Shaw Hall or
Shaw Hall? Let's take the middle 1950s.
Okay. What do you remember about the
1955? Let's take that. I went in the Army.
All right. You were in the Army.
In the Army for 2 years as a radio teletype operator. So I was a cook at Shaw Hall.
All right.
When I went in the Army in 1955, got out in 1956, and then that summer I went to Mason Abbott as a cook for for the summer. Then the Shaw Food Service, Brody Food Service was opening. The buildings had been opened and they were being fed in the old Quonset cafeteria. The three buildings had been opened,
mm-hmm.
but they were being fed in the old Quonset cafeteria. When I went over there, it was when the food service opened, and so I went there as a cook.
I see.
And we were feeding up to 3,000 people.
Wow. That must have been a pretty large operation.
They say it was the largest in the world. So
mm-hmm. At that time.
I've heard, they mm-hmm. say, numbers, they say things.
Mm-hmm. So did you get drafted in the military?
I got drafted. Absolutely got drafted.
So you weren't going to make that a career. Where did you serve?
I was in the Battle of Galveston, Texas. No, I was in Missouri. I was in 6 months in Georgia in training, which was the longest training school I have. So 1/4 of my Army career I was in training to be a radio teletype operator.
Uh-huh.
Then I was in Texas, Fort Hood, Texas, for most of the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to use any of those skills later on in life that you got from the military, or no?
I still do military lettering when I write. Which is, I still do, you learn military lettering to write very quickly uh-huh. and legibly. I still write quickly, but you can't read it.
So. Oh. when you got back from the service, did you then have a GI Bill, or was that not
a GI Bill when I got out? And so I was still doing it part time. So sure. I did get for a long time. I did get a little bit,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but not.
But
cool.
But it still was very cheap, mm-hmm. and so a little bit I was getting just added to it, but it wasn't that much.
Yeah. How would you describe, now obviously this is the time of the large building boom on campus, increase in the number of students. How would you describe the mood on campus in the 50s?
It was different. Mm-hmm. There was a different, as a generation, which is a weird item, but it was different. These the people older than me, my age, but then the next ones coming along, and I noticed them, when I noticed it first was that there was... There's a lot of talk about teenager rights. Well, when I was a teenager, I didn't have any rights.
Uh-huh.
But this group coming up, they were they were kind of spoiled. They were very spoiled. That came here in the late 50s for a few more years, and they were the ones, and there were a lot of them. The university had been growing. It really, let's go back a few years, back to 1943. The enrollment was 3,500, and in 1946, it was, the 3 years later, 14,000. You know, that was the biggest change I had seen. That was four times as many people in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's kept on growing from that. Buildings kept on being built. There was a big building boom right after the war, and another one in the 60s. I got lost there.
So we're talking about the 50s and how the students were different, and
they
came in with a different attitude.
I noticed it. An incident was, they used to have demonstrations, but during finals week, that's the only thing people were concentrating on, finals week. But nothing else was concerned of them. The demonstration, and it was during finals week. So these kids, instead of taking care of their finals, were demonstrating. These people came along. It happened to be, times makes the person, or the person fits the times. This kind of spoiled generation came along just the same time as the Vietnam War, concerned about, races.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of fit into this. If nothing else was happening during this generation, you wonder, what they would have been like. So this was the time, very late 50s and 60s of the demonstrations.
Mm-hmm. So that began.
Yeah.
What were some of those that you remember? Did that affect you?
Not much. They closed down East Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
The traffic couldn't get through, I used to walk everywhere I went, and some classes they were stopped, but I never had one that. Our classes were always held.
There were some. Was it the late 60s when they took over one of the halls or one of the?
Yes. I was involved in that,
Okay. I know it's later, but.
Later, yeah. Okay, shall I get
that? That activist, let's talk about that.
Okay, but I had a different job by then.
Okay,
I was an editor for the Division of Housing and Food Service.
Okay.
Division of Dormitories and Food Services. Then it had changed later. Sometimes in the evening, I'd go to one of the halls to eat dinner if my wife wasn't home or something. So one of the other guys and I went over to Wilson Hall, and it was closed down. The students had taken over the hall. We went somewhere else to eat, and then Henry Foster called me. And one, I had been a food supervisor, a food manager.
Mm-hmm.
I had been a food manager before being an editor. Not too long before that, I'd been a food manager within the year. Mm-hmm. Okay, Henry Foster called me and wanted to know if I would go into Wilson Hall, be the food manager, because there's where the problem was in the food service of the employees, supposedly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I sure, why not?
Mm-hmm. So you went to Wilson after this?
I went
this
to Wilson, mm-hmm. opened the food service back up.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear stories about, you know, that, you know, after the students went in there, they wrecked the whole place. I was the first one in, opened the door, first one in. Everything was cleaned, nothing out of place, nothing broken. You know, they left it perfect.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Well, some of the accounts were a little exaggerated of their destruction.
No destruction. You know, they cleaned all the dishes, all the equipment, everything. It was.
Uh-huh. That is a different story than what I've heard from or read or seen in some accounts. But Emory Foster was the overall supervisor.
Emory Foster was manager of the Division of Housing and Food Services.
Okay.
And he took the title manager. He was had been manager of the MSU Union, the Union Building.
Okay.
And then in 1945, a number of the units were brought together as the Division of Housing and Food Services. It was the dormitories they had then, the Union Building, the food stores, which had just been started, the laundry, these all became one division. And the division and I started the same year.
I see.
But Emory Foster was an amazing man.
Uh-huh.
You know, he claimed he could do any job in any of these, and it was true, he could. Managers, there are two types, basically. Ones that people will do things for them because they want to, and second type is one that will do something for them because, you know, the person is demanding, they're scared of them or something.
Mm-hmm.
Emory Foster was one, you know, was a leader, a real leader.
Mm-hmm. So he was the first type.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody liked him. We had, later on, bowling, we got into bowling, the whole division, men's bowling teams, had a bunch of them.
Uh-huh.
And he bowled on one of them. You know, he's just one of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
But he really knew how to organize. You know, he's one that put together the building of the dormitories. You know, if it hadn't been for him, you know, it would have been done, but wouldn't been done as correctly as it was.
Mm-hmm. Your own job, it changed then? And would you talk a little bit about that?
Where are we now?
We're up to the late 60s.
Yeah.
How was it that you left the food service and went to... You were at Wilson Hall.
I was at Wilson Hall just for... Okay, let's go back to... Let's go back to Brody.
Okay.
Cook at Brody, moved up to be the head chef at Brody.
Okay.
Then I was a food supervisor, and then I was the senior production food supervisor, and then they wanted to know if I wanted to be food manager of Acres Hall.
All right.
Okay. I didn't have a degree then. I was still taking classes. I was probably. Uh-huh. Pretty well. It's kind of hard to say, you know, what class I was in because I just took them, you know, 3 or 4 credits at a time. Mm-hmm. So I was well in my senior year, probably. And so I went over to Acres as food manager, and then the Mason Abbott food manager left, and so the manager there wanted to know if I would come over and be food manager at Mason Abbott. So I did.
Mm-hmm. That was familiar territory to you.
Yeah, I've been there, but it was, you know, it was a small one compared with where I'd been a couple of years before Brody.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in the good people, always good people, mm-hmm. always good employees. That the university has always had good employees. I can't say enough about mm-hmm. you know how I like working with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I met Mason Abbott. as food manager, and there was a probably 3-4 years before that, this Division of Housing and Food Services had started a house organ, an employees publication called Serving State.
Mm-hmm.
And my classes I was taking, my degree I was working towards finally was in advertising, you know, which means there was a lot of journalism in that.
Mm-hmm.
So they wouldn't know if I would, you know, be editor of it, of Serving State. And so part-time I was working as the manager, food manager at Mason Abbott, and then working in Holmes Hall where the Housing and Food Services office were editing Serving State. And then that kind of gradually worked to where